so much hair for a newborn. We need to start planning his baptism and his holiday outfit and, ooh, his birthday party.
Sure, but, how long are you planning to stay?
If you're one of those who goes to meet your newborn nephew and stays until his first birthday party, switch to Cricket Wireless. Use your phone as many days as you want in Mexico without extra cost. Smile. You're on Cricket. Requires eligible plan. Minimum $55 per month. Data speed usage and other restrictions apply. Coverage not available everywhere. See store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here again this week. And this is Natalie Mullinex with Realty Universal Radio. I'm actually in sunny Hawaii today. And I know most of you listening this time of year will be in having good weather. So welcome. And if you want to call in, the call-in number is 347-945-5428. This week, we're instead of splitting our show up, where we do half real estate and half motivational self-help issues in the community, we're actually going to dedicate the whole show to GoGiver. And this is really, really interesting. I'm so looking forward to our guest who's coming on within a couple minutes. And again, if you want to call in, it's 347-945-5428. We are going to have a blast today. This is really exciting. And go-givers, what the show about is, do go-givers really thrive more in today's economy? Bob Berg, well-known speaker, author, transformational expert, joins us today to discuss The Go-Giver, a book that he co-authored and shares with companies all over the world to teach giving, transformation, shifting the focus off of yourself, and how that changes everything. I don't think we're going to take many breaks today. He teaches principles that work. You wonder, can a subtle shift in focus really make that big of a difference in your business and your income? Bob says yes. Bob Berg is sought after speaker at company leadership and sales conferences. He regularly addresses audiences ranging in size from 50 to 16,000. He has shared the platform with notables including today's top thought leaders, broadcast personalities, Olympic athletes, and political leaders, including a former United States president. He is co-author of the international bestseller that we're going to discuss today called The Go-Giver and Go-Givers Sell More, and author of Endless Referrals and numerous other books. More than 1 million copies have been sold in total. The Go-Giver has been translated into 21 languages. His newest book, which I'm literally looking forward to reading too, is Adversaries into Allies, Win People Over Without Manipulation or Coercion. That is exciting. I can see where a lot of people can go back in time with that. Bob is an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. He is also an unapologetic animal fanatic, yay, and serves as vice president of the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption and Clinic in his town of Jupiter, Florida. Wow, I know that's exciting. Without further ado, I want to welcome Bob Berg.
Natalie, always great to be with you.
Oh, gosh, I'm so glad you were able to come on today. It's so exciting. I know how swamped you are and all that you do. So
I
you're
am
in Jupiter
never,
today.
Never too busy for you, my friend.
Oh, you're awesome. How's your weather over there today?
From what I understand, although I haven't been out much, it is sunny and warm. So that's
awesome.
Pretty much Florida most of the time, other than the hurricane season.
Makes sense. And you're not really in Hurricane Alley, are you?
No, yeah. We found out the hard way.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, but we're it's off season for that, so we're fine.
Awesome. Yeah, and we're 5,000 miles apart right now,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool, and warm weather to warm weather.
I'm sure it is.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. We have a lot of listeners that listen archive, which because so many people love to download the show, and so this is really exciting. And I want to go into, well, we can take commercials, but we probably won't have time because there's just so much to go over, and you are just amazing, and I can tell you that firsthand. I think I met you back in the NSA convention, right, back in 1998, I believe.
Yep, National Speakers Association in, I think that was Washington, D.C., if I'm not mistaken.
I know it was on the East Coast. I'm dating myself.
It was either that or Philadelphia. It was one of those.
I think maybe Philadelphia.
I think it was. You're right. Uh-huh.
I think it was Philadelphia. I remember. We are dating ourselves, aren't we? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know what, it was Philly, because I remember the convention hotel was too booked, so I was a little ways away, and having to walk through the city. They had just campaigned to do really renovate Philadelphia, I think, right before that. And they did a great job, and I'll always remember wearing my suit, and this guy, true story, was laying on the ground, homeless guy, and he literally lifted his head up and said, "Nice suit." It was a neat experience, and that was a really fun convention. I've noticed with NSA and speakers, and I do speaking. My speaking's been mostly real estate speaking, of course. So it's in trainings with the agents and brokers, but NSA, I think to me, and you've been a member, gosh, for eons, probably. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not dating you. I'm just saying. I am that old.
I've been a member for eons.
You started really young. The NSA has got to be one of the best organizations, in my opinion, with speakers and just, we're going to talk about Go-Giver today and Go-Givers. It is just one amazing organization where everybody's so loving and giving back, and I guess that's part of the premise that it was started on.
Well, they are, and I'm always careful now when I say NSA to say National Speakers Association, so people know it's the people who talk, not the people who listen, that NSA.
Very, very good point. Right, the National Speakers Association. We are not.
Yeah, very good. Not that other NSA.
I'm not even thinking there. Hello. That's really good.
That's when those acronyms can come back to haunt you. But
exactly.
They are. They're a terrific organization, and they were founded by Cabot Robert and Bill Gove, two amazing salespeople, professional salespeople who in personal development authorities who turned into speakers, who became speakers, and put together a small group of other successful speakers. And it was really about sharing information, and it was about building a bigger pie, living on the creative plane. Rather than the competitive plane, and understanding that as everyone gave value to one another, it sort of built everyone, and that's sort of how it happened. And now, whatever 30, 40 years later, it's thousands and thousands of members, and thousands attend their annual conferences as well as their winter workshops. So yes, it is a fantastic organization.
And everybody's really giving and loving. I mean, you can feel it. You can feel the energy. You can feel the unconditional love. You really can. I mean, when you compare to many, many organizations are wonderful, but this is one that literally they walk their talk and you can just, it's just amazing. So, wow. So it's today. You've written a bunch of books, and we'll get into some of that today too. And you're a Go-Giver. Tell us a little bit about where the premise of how that started and what with the how you put that together with your co-author.
Sure. Well, years ago, I in my first book was Endless Referrals, which was really a how-to book on really showing people who loved what they did and were good at the technical aspects of what they did, showing them how to really be able to go out and create relationships with others, develop those know you, like you, trust you relationships that are so important when it comes to doing business with people directly and having the opportunity to obtain referrals from them. And doing so in a way that was not only comfortable for them, but comfortable for you, the salesperson. And it was a traditional how-to book. And through the year, and that came out in the early 90s. Well, throughout the years, I'd read a lot of business parables. Probably my first one was Og Mandino's Greatest Salesman in the World, and James Klassen's The Richest Man in Babylon. And then back in, I think it was the early 80s, Dr. Ken Blanchard, Dr. Spencer Johnson, they came out with their one-minute series, right? One-minute manager, salesperson, you know. And there were other. Robin Sharma wrote great parables, the monk who sold his Ferrari, people such as Chris Widener, many others. And then eventually Spencer Johnson, Who Moved My Cheese. Well, I always found with parables that you could read them in an hour, hour and a half, and there was always a great, great lesson you could take away from them. But sometimes many great lessons, but always at least one real huge takeaway that made a difference for me. And eventually, I thought, you know, I'd love to take the basic message of endless referrals, which is, again, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust, and put it in a parable. And so I sort of came up with the name The Go-Giver and had a very, very sketchy basic idea, surface idea of what I wanted to do with it. But I quickly realized as I sat down to type it out that, and I mean when I say quickly, I mean within a couple of minutes, that there's a big difference between writing a how-to book, which pretty much anyone can write. You write down what you know and have it edited. There's a big difference between that and writing a business parable, which by its very nature is a work of fiction. So I just knew, and it wasn't that it was outside my comfort zone that bothered me. I can live outside my comfort zone. It was, as Dr. John Maxwell would say, it was outside my strength zone. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it justice. So I contacted a friend of mine, John David Mann, who up till that point I considered him a friend, but we had never actually met in person. He was editor-in-chief of a magazine, a trade magazine I used to write for. And I told him this idea, and he's such a great, great editor. And I also knew, although at that time most, you know, many people didn't know him unless you were in that particular trade, but he was a great writer and was the ghostwriter of a couple really big books. And so I asked him if he would consider being the lead writer and storyteller of The Go-Giver. And fortunately, he said yes, because he's so fantastic. So we got together on it and, you know, within a few months had the story written. And then it took about a year to and about 23 publisher rejections to actually get someone who took it. Yeah, but when they did, it was the perfect publisher for us, Penguin Portfolio, and they have just been such a fantastic publishing partner. It's been a great experience. So
that is so exciting. So really, you thought about it for years, and you could just feel it weaving it in. That makes That seems to happen so many times when you see work of arts, right? People just, it's something that's within them, and then they finally put it together.
Yeah. It only took from the time I had the first thought to actually getting it out there published. It was about probably 5 years.
Right.
But that's okay. And you know, we've had a lot of fun with it. It's sold about 500,000 copies so far. And you know, it's really caught on. But really, John, in his writing, that's where the credit goes, because the guy is just an absolute master storyteller. The basic premise of the book is very, very, very simple, Natalie, and that is that shifting one's focus, and this is really the key aspect, shifting one's focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. And that doing so is not only a nice way to live life, but it's a very financially profitable way as well, and not for any kind of magical, mystical reasons. It's very logical that in a basically free market-based economy in which we live, the only reason someone's going to do business with you is because they feel there's more value to them in doing so than in not doing so. And that's how it should be. People should have a choice, and they should do business with you because they feel it's in their best interest to do so. And this is only going to happen when they can sense that your focus is on them.
And they know you're real and genuine, right? Just for to get back. People aren't doing it just to...
Right. Well, one of the four laws is the law of authenticity. So it's very key.
Wow.
that we're genuine in this. Yeah.
I read your book. I read your book when it first came out. I loved it. I was just in thought. It's just the story was so wonderful. And it's a short read, you know, which is easy to do, too, you know. But so the story had such impact. The way that it was weaved, as you're right, John, must be a wonderful writer, and the way you two did it, it's just interesting stories and of life. Now, your title, the Go-Giver, so it seems to contradict traditional wisdom,
mm-hmm.
and was that intentional?
Yeah, you know, I think when you name a book, you want it to have a title that grabs people and maybe even has a little bit of a pattern disconnect, if you will. When people see The Go-Giver, and it says a powerful story about a business idea that's a subtitle, they're thinking, well, what could that possibly mean? Go-Giver? I don't get that.
Right.
And yet what we find is that people very much related to the title, because practically anyone in sales, Natalie, they feel very strongly about what they do. They, you know, whether it's real estate and just really having a mission or a passion for connecting people with the right home or helping people to successfully market their home in a way that's less stressful, in which they feel happier, in which they're able to, you know, or whether it's someone selling, baked goods that they know just provides pleasure to people who, whatever it is, people who are selling something typically... There's a joy to them in giving value to others. So I think people, on a very intuitive level, understood that. They got that from the title. So The Go-Giver, they may not have understood what it meant,
right.
And that's what they would read the book to learn and find out and hopefully enjoy the story. But I think on a very basic level, they kind of got that, and it was something that caused them to be interested in it.
I love it, the way you, the stories, of course somebody needs to get the book to see the stories, but the stories, basically you have several stories in the book, and I love the part where one of the companies, you had a company that was taking people and they were teaching them to just be, kind of bring the child out in them.
Nicole Martin's company, yeah, she was the CEO in the story, yes.
Okay, and how did that was another premise, another idea of going in, and she was, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, she had to tap into her own sense of abundance, in a sense, that we were talking in that one, it was law number two, the law of compensation, where your income is determined by how many people you serve, as well as how well you serve them. And where law number one, the law of value, is the bedrock foundational principle, because you have to provide great value to others, it's not enough to provide great value to just one person. If you want to have a healthy income, you've got to impact the lives of a number of people. And Nicole's story was that she started out as a school teacher, and loved what she did. She loved the value she provided. The kids loved her. The parents loved her. But she felt stifled that she was kind of, you know, there was a lot of red tape and bureaucracy, and she couldn't really do what she felt was best. And the money certainly wasn't what she would have liked. And so what she did is she was kind of an inventor. So she had invented these games with the kids where it was technology based, that allowed them to learn quicker. And she talked to one of the parents at a PTA meeting who was into computers and technology, and they talked about putting something together, you know, that this and that. But the big thing about her was she had to realize that if she could expand her reach, leverage her value, she could create much more value from many, many, many more people, and her income would improve dramatically. And so that was sort of Nicole's journey, in a sense, to realizing, hey, you know what? It's not only okay to make a lot of money, it's fantastic to make a lot of money when it's the result of providing value to many others. And this is why we say that money is an echo of value. Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means that the value must come first. Your focus cannot really be on the money and get very, very wealthy. It tends to not work that way. It's one of those laws of life. When your focus is on bringing value to others, now the money comes as a result of that. So the value comes first. The money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you've provided.
That's, and then the relationships, and you've done this for years. It just really is such an expert, and you really walk your talk.
Thank you.
Talk your walk, walk your talk.
Something like that.
The principles, the principles in your book, the five laws of stratospheric success. You're saying law number one is the law of value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other laws were law of compensation.
Mm-hmm.
To just preach. Now, what's the law of influence?
Well, that's law number three, and the law of influence says that your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, this one sounds very counterproductive.
Right,
maybe even Pollyanna-ish, right? Your influence is determined by how abundantly, right? But when you really think of it, the great leaders, the greatest leaders, the top influencers, the most profitable salespeople, the highest producers, this is simply how they run their lives and conduct their businesses.
Right.
They're always looking for ways to add value to others. This is what they do. Now, I want to qualify that, though, if I may, because I think it's very important to understand that when we say place other people's interests first, we are not saying you should ever be anyone's doormat martyr, right, or self-sacrificial in any way. Nothing like that whatsoever. It's just that as several of the mentors, including the one that was featured in this chapter, Sam, the financial services professional, as he told Joe, the protege, and as we mentioned earlier in the show, all things being equal, the golden rule of business is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. Now,
exactly.
It turns out that there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely and authentically shifting your focus, moving from that, from an I focus or a me focus to an other focus, looking for ways, as Sam, to quote Sam in the book, to make your win about the other person's win.
You know, I love that. I know in real estate for years, of course, and we've always, have done it and teach the agents and brokers too, that it really is not about us. It's about figuring what the people really want, mm-hmm. And finding that and making that happen for them, finding out what their dreams, what their goals are, and then taking it from one point to another, pulling us out of it. It's not about us, like you said. It's just, it's definitely... reality.
Yeah,
people, and you're right. A lot of salespeople, I think, a lot of salespeople get that when they're, if they're productive, mm-hmm. like you said, and if they're not looking at just the money or how much commission am I going to make in real estate, and just really focus on the other person's needs,
right.
and make it happen. It's wonderful. It's like,
Natalie, as I see it, great leadership, and we see this over and over again, great leadership is never about the leader. Great influence is never about the influencer. And great salesmanship is never about the salesperson. It's always
right.
about that other person. It's about everyone whose lives you choose to touch. And when you think about it, when we define selling, and there are many ways to define selling, my favorite one, the one that works for me, is simply selling is simply determining or finding out what someone wants, needs, or desires and helping them to get it. That's selling. Mm-hmm. It's nothing more, nothing less. And we only find out by focusing on them. We certainly can't tell them what they want and expect that they're going to, right?
No, and everybody's different. And different, you know, many times I've noticed in sales over the years, somebody says they want something, and when you really listen to what they're wanting, you can show them, wait a minute, what about this? And it isn't even what they thought they wanted,
exactly.
Right? But being really caring and being intuitive to what their needs are, you can kind of help guide them to what they really wanted, which you could never do if you were just looking at what is good for you, you know, because it's not about you. Well, in your teachings, you break down some paradigms and about sales. And so would you say that you downplay the selling skills and techniques?
Oh, no, not at all. It's just that I, because, hey, they're important. Any pro studies their craft, and selling is a profession when it's done correctly. You know, when we look at why a top producer is a top producer, we can be tempted to credit it to certain things that, while important, aren't necessarily correct. For example, many people will say, well, you know, what makes the top producing salespeople the top producing? You know, what are the determining factors? What's the determining factor?
Right.
Someone might say, well, it's belief in what they're selling or having a great product or service. Now, do great salespeople believe in what they're doing and have a great product or service? Well, of course, absolutely. But so do a lot of mediocre salespeople. They have a great product,
right,
and they believe in what they're selling, and yet they're mediocre salespeople, not top producers. So while that's important, it's not the determining factor. Another thing is, well, the greatest salespeople, they have amazing product knowledge. They know their product or their market or what have you, outside and inside and backward and forward and sideways and diagonally. And, well, it's true. They tend to have great product knowledge. Yet so do a lot of just average salespeople have great product knowledge. So important? Sure. Is it the determining factor? No, not necessarily. And then you get to sales skills. I say, well, don't the top sales producers make a study of their craft? Don't they know every approach, every opening, every close, every this, every that? Yeah, sure they do. They study their craft. They're professionals, and they should. But you know what? So do a lot of just average salespeople.
That's true.
You know, they make a study of it. They attend every seminar. So important, absolutely. But I don't think it's the determining factor. So we take belief in your product or having a great product, product knowledge, sales skills. They're all important. But I also believe that as important as they all are, they're just the entry fee to be able
Would
to
you-
play.
Yeah, because like you have to ask for the order, right?
People, right. You have to know
it's funny.
You have to believe
so
in what you're doing. You have to have a great product. Yeah.
Yeah, but you'll see many people. They'll be. I mean, and we're rating it to real estate, and they found the perfect house, and people, we love it, we love it, we love it, and then the agent doesn't say, "Would you like to write a contract? Are you ready to?" You know, they have to ask for the order, but yet. I think it's the connecting with the people is what's going to keep the people with you, right? Connecting and listening and hearing and
And that's where focus comes, and that's the determining factor, that those who are the most successful, profitable salespeople are the ones who above all others are absolutely laser focused on the other person.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Hey, Bob, you know what? If it's okay with you, we're not going to take a commercial break, if that's okay with you, because
sure.
It's so interesting. And we've already gone through half of the show already. Time flies when you're having fun.
Especially when I get to talk to Natalie.
You're so sweet. I want to say some of the other techniques, some of the other things you're going into. Oh, well, before we do that, let's go ahead and how do people find you? Because you also, I mean, I know you're dealing with hundreds of companies and you actually, people can actually learn your systems and be able to teach it to their organizations and groups. Mm-hmm. So should they go to your website? How would they find you?
Yeah, best is just to go to Burg, BURG.com. And what I suggest people do is subscribe to my Influence and Success Insights. And when they do, they'll receive Chapter 1 of The Go-Giver and Endless Referrals and a couple of my other books they can read if they'd like. From there, they can take a look at the blog, they can look at our certified speaker program, and they can connect with me on social media. So pretty much everything is right there on the homepage, expertly set up and put together by my amazing business partner, Kathy Tagenal.
Oh, fantastic. So it's burg.com, B-U-R-G.com.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, perfect. Because and then if companies too, I mean, all the information was there, if depending if it's an individual person or company and organization. This is tell us a little bit about, I'm going to jump away and then come back because I want to still go over the laws if it's okay with you. But I know a lot of people that we have that listen to our shows. We have real estate brokers, agents, a lot of people, sellers, buyers. I'm just saying because it's Realty Universal Radio. But people from all walks of life in different industries also tend to listen to our show. And what you're doing is really transformational in everything in life, no matter what field you're in. You know, to get to that point where you're comfortable with yourself, especially if you're in sales, and comfortable with people. I mean, it all connects. Especially like when you mention your newest book, Adversaries into Allies. I mean, so it's kind of like, what is that? If people that maybe were, you're going to turn them into allies. So if you can't, it's kind of like if you can't fight them, you don't want to fight them ever. That's like a taboo word, right? That's a taboo word. You want to be friends. But say your allies, they're not your allies because you're in an industry and before they've gotten to know you, they're adversaries, okay? And hopefully once people get to know you, I know I found that in my industry, once in real estate, once they know us and they've worked with us, they love us and they refer people and we vice versa. But so tell us, that is a little bit about that. I know it's going off the go-giver a little bit. Not really, because everything you do, Bob, is all about people loving people, giving back. So
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Really, Adversaries into Allies is about mastering people skills. It's being able to genuinely help people feel good about themselves, good about you, good about the situation, while you attain personal satisfaction. And that might mean when you're in the selling process in terms of a direct sale, or it might mean asking your boss for a raise, or it might be getting that difficult customer service representative to work with you as opposed to work against you. It might mean having to deal with that difficult bureaucrat, or it might be dealing better with a family member. So an adversary isn't necessarily an enemy. An adversary could be somebody who might be a very nice person, but but situationally and for whatever reason it is, they're standing in the way of your satisfaction or happiness, and we need to be able to work with people in such a way that everyone really comes away from it feeling good about themselves and getting what they want.
That's wonderful. So wouldn't it be nice if you could just go in and negotiate on some of these worldwide problems and get in with the leaders and sit at the table and negotiate with them to help them?
Yeah, you know, and with
train
some
them.
People,
they need some training.
a lot of people do, and a lot of people just need to maybe understand why it's in their best interest to be able to negotiate in certain areas. Dale Carnegie in his landmark bestseller How to Win Friends and Influence People, he said many amazing things in that book. It's a masterpiece. But I think the underlying principle. In that book, the underlying premise, if you will, is where he said, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. Mm-hmm. So when we approach a negotiation, if you will, we've always got to be asking ourselves questions such as, how does what I'm asking this person to do align with their goals? With their wants, with their needs, with their desires? How does what asking this other person to do align with their values? And when we ask ourselves these questions thoughtfully and intelligently and genuinely, authentically, not as a way to manipulate another human being into doing our will, but as a way to help build everyone in the process, then we're able to accomplish that which we want to accomplish. First, sometimes it's teaching someone why it's in their best interest to be open to a certain idea as opposed to their being dogmatic and set in their position.
And so judgmental, right? Just saying my way or the highway, when we need to be a little bit more open-minded and say, hey, wait a minute, there's more than one way to do this. How can we make a win-win here? And I was listening early today to an interview on Tim Ferriss's blog, and he was interviewing Mr. Beck, right? So Glenn Beck. And Glenn Beck was stating, that how everybody needs to get along with everybody, and there's just so much going on there out in the world where we're getting more cliques and groups, you know, where oh, I'm not a part of this group, so I want to tell you what to do with my group, et cetera, et cetera. And we really need a lot more love and peace in the world, which is, it just falls over into everything, right? But don't you think some of the people, when you're trying to turn an adversary into an ally, it's so important to be able to kind of maybe get into their mind or think, well, how are they thinking about this? Why do they have that position even, right? And kind of understand it where we may not understand it if our, you know, our, and kind of open up the idea of, you know, we both got to be right. Or it doesn't mean both one has to be right and one has to be wrong. There's got to be, you know, and that's really important. And
Well, you ask a great question, and it comes down to understand. This is actually the second principle of the five principles of ultimate influence, and that is understanding what I call the clash of belief systems.
Okay.
And a belief system, I define a belief as a subjective truth. A belief is a subjective truth. It's the truth as you understand the truth to be, or as I understand the truth to be, which doesn't mean it's the truth. It means it's our truth. Now, our truth... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say sometimes our truth and the truth are the same. But often they're not. And the reason why is because we all see the world based on our own model or our own map, what I call our belief system. And a belief system is a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television shows, movies, popular culture, cultural mores, everything we touch, taste, hear, see, smell, whatever, every experience that comes into our lives comprises our belief system. However, something very, very important to understand is that as human beings, by the time we're little more than toddlers, our basic foundational belief system is pretty much etched in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that comes in after that pretty much is just added on to that basic premise. So we grow up and we live our lives controlled by what we could call an unconscious operating system. Okay, that's the,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and we don't even know it. And that's why we see the world a certain way, and those are our truths. And they're subjective. And we don't even realize consciously that our life is being run by these subjective truths, by our belief system. Now, it's also the same with this other person. Their life is being run through the prism of their belief system. So what happens is often in what's supposed to be a negotiation, you've got two people with totally opposite or very different belief systems who don't even realize, they may know they disagree about certain things, but they don't even realize that their entire way of seeing the world is different. So what we've got to do is we're not necessarily going to understand their belief system. The fact is they probably don't totally understand their belief system. It's unconscious. But what we can do is we can understand that they are coming at it. They are seeing the world from a different point of view than we are. And once we understand that, now we can take the steps to create the environment for a win-win outcome.
That's wonderful. Yeah, absolutely wonderful. I mean, it's almost like you hear when somebody says, wait a minute, this is black, and they go, no, it's green. Well, how can you, it's not green, it's black, right? How can two people see that color differently, right? You know, it's almost like, what do they call it when you have, not schemas, but there's like blind spots? blend shop something, and I think it ties in all different aspects. So I think it's really, it can be difficult because people want to genuinely be who they are, and our histories and our upbringing and different cultures, cultural beliefs, religious beliefs, or just different things, traditions, can make people feel very comfortable as well, too, right?
Exactly,
so
yes.
I guess it's a matter of accepting everybody for who they are, and then, because typically the subjects and the topics, and for example, I'm in real estate, but in real estate we're constantly dealing with self-help, we're dealing with people, personalities, a lot of other issues other than just selling a house, right, or properties, mm-hmm. That come into play, and I think that's in every business and everything, and people want to feel loved, people want to feel accepted, people want to feel liked, nobody likes to feel shunned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
It's this is it's really wonderful. So many times the topic at hand, the issue that you need to find a win-win for, is so difficult, more difficult when everybody's looking at it from a different angle, right? And it's just so how do you get somebody? Say for an example, you just I don't want to relate it to real estate because that's just too, you know. But say for an example, you know, you have to work out an issue and these people they're arguing over whatever product it is, and there's a group in the group, and there's, you know, three buyers, three sellers, for example, and I'm just saying buying anything, and there's a company needs to start selling this product, and they're trying to make decisions. How do you, and you go into the room, and you see that you've got people, say there's five, six people, and they're all from different cultures, different backgrounds. Just say they're totally different all the way around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which we know with humans, the heart's the same, you know, heart and the love, mm-hmm. and deep down, everybody's pretty much the same, really,
sure.
right? But it's getting to mm-hmm. that. So when you really, would you recommend, okay, we're going to get right to this product and we're going to discuss this right away, or you really need to do your homework and study the different people you're dealing with and where they're coming from, right? What would you, I'm giving you a couple loaded questions there, but
okay.
I'm just thinking that, you know, I remember a story one time with somebody I know on the East Coast that sold huge, heavy equipment around the country, and they were trying to sell the product in Japan. They flew in, met with the people in Japan, and thought they were going to close this in an hour meeting, not realizing that, no, you have to build the relationships mm-hmm. and go back over so many months, and, you know, this isn't just a, you know, here, it's a quick sale. And they were surprised because in their world of the East Coast in the United States, they're used to going in, showing the product, and closing the deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know I'm scattering this around a little bit, but there's a lot of times where there's so many more issues, right? So it's wise to find out who you're dealing with. Would you agree?
Well, you make a great point. And it's absolutely key in a situation like this where there are people from different cultures or people from different backgrounds to study as much and learn as much about that particular culture and that person as you possibly can. In any type of negotiation, the more information you have, the stronger you are. So, and these days with the internet and with social media, there's absolutely no reason to not be as prepared as possible by knowing who the players are and understanding their basic belief systems. Once you do that, now it's a matter of depending upon what the issue is that the team is getting together for. Now it's a matter of aligning the ultimate goal of the product or service with their wants, needs, desires, values, and so forth, and bringing them together that way. So we're allowing their strengths to come through, you know, as opposed to it being people against one another. It's a matter of
right.
a team being a whole group of individuals who all allow their, and we help them to bring their talents and their joy and their desires and their values to the table.
Amazing, because everybody can learn from everybody, right? We all know
sure,
something
absolutely.
That the other person doesn't know, and vice versa, always. And it's getting that interesting. I love it. I love it. Your stories, I would love to be able to get more into the stories, but we're running out of time because the stories in The Go-Giver are just so, I recommend anybody listening to this to get Go-Giver. You can order that on Amazon or just any the bookstores or...
Yeah, and if they come to Berg.com, they can get that chapter one for free so they can kind of see how it reads and if they like it, and then they can always click through if they like, and that will take them to Amazon. Or it's at their local.
Oh, I loved it. The stories really make you want to get in, jump in, and give back. I mean, they were just beautifully written. And And to anybody, there is short reads, so you don't. It's not like you're going to have to read a novel to get the point and get the mission. It definitely though the stories when I read it, I remember I didn't want to put the book down. It was engaging. You know, you just didn't want to stop, and so it was wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm going to go. Yeah, you say you can't make a sale, like you were just. Token it. You can't make a sale, right?
Right?
What do you mean? Sales are made every day,
right?
But
right.
Yeah.
So why do we say that? Yeah, why? That's a question we often get. Hey, it's a good question. It's a fun question. You know, when John and I say you can't make a sale, what do we really mean by that? Well, the reason we say that is because in a basic free market environment, meaning that no one is forced to buy from you,
mm-hmm.
you can't. Make a sale because you can't make anyone do anything they don't want to do. What
right.
you can do is you can create the environment where people feel good about you. They know, like, and trust you. They respect your judgment. They know that you are looking out for their best interest. They feel as though they understand how this your product or service is going to help them, and they choose to buy. So while you can't make a sale, you can create the situation where someone chooses to buy, and you are there to receive the sale. Now, someone might ask, yeah, thank you. Someone might ask, well, isn't that just semantics? And, well, my answer would be, yes, it is absolutely semantics. But, you know, sometimes semantics are important. Not only in what we tell others about what we do, but in what we tell ourselves about what we do. Because if we believe that our mission is to, or that our job is to make the sale, then it really becomes all about us. On the other hand, if we believe we're out there to create the environment where that person chooses to buy based on what they feel is best for them, then it's all about them. It's all about the customer, and that's exactly where our focus should be.
That's amazing. And everybody has different ways of thinking and level. You know, the customer has different, depending on who you're dealing with. And it's, I think the one universal fact is they can feel your heart. They can feel if you have integrity. They can feel if you care. You know.
Well, and this is where Law 4 comes in. Yeah, this is where Law 4, the law of authenticity, comes in. And in this one, in the story, happened to be from the vantage point of a realtor, Deborah Davenport, as you might recall.
Mm-hmm.
And the law of authenticity says, the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And Deborah, a hugely successful realtor, she shared that early in her career, she learned a very important lesson. And that is that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, which we were talking about earlier, the technical mm-hmm. skills, even the people skills, which are so, they're all very, very important. But as important as they are, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true, authentic core.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Now, when you do, when you, as I like to say, show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. People are comfortable with you. People feel they know you. They like you. They trust you.
They're
much more inclined.
There.
Hmm?
Yeah. There's a consistency, you know. And
yeah.
The internet today, it's very, the internet, it's like I love the internet because I'm able to work virtually in different areas and travel and do what I need to do that in the mm-hmm. old days I would have had to just been in one spot at a time.
Right.
You know, you couldn't do
right.
it. So thank God in my industry there's a lot of people I've worked with over the years who know me, but I'm just giving an example with the internet. So many things are out there, and you don't know if somebody doesn't know the person.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be able to see if there's authenticity there. You know, if they're it's real or it's bogus, or because there's just so many things going on right now. So I think that even carries more weight these days than it used to. And I've noticed we really seem to want to go back to the old times. You know, because things are becoming so virtual everywhere that we're losing some of that touch, that touchy feely. So I think that I agree with you. And that kind of rolls back to what you were saying about you still need to be yourself. Don't give up who you are while you're
sure.
working with
well,
everybody.
Well, you know, remember,
yeah.
people don't do business with and refer business to computers. It's the people sitting at the computers that does. It really is still, technology is great, but it's still all about the relationship. Technology is simply that medium to help you create the know, like, and trust feelings. And whether it's through email or your blog or through social media, it's always about asking yourself, how can I add value to others? And, you know, even with social media, it's very difficult. If someone's a phonus balonus, it's difficult to keep that act up for too long. Somebody's going to find out, someone will be on to you, and word's going to spread faster than it ever has before.
Right.
And what's
interesting
is, you know, when you really have an authentic desire to provide value to others through social media, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or any of the others, people can tell. When it's authentic, people can tell. Not that there aren't people who are real good fakers and they can fool you for a while, but eventually, you know, it comes back. But
it would catch up with you, I think.
It does. And so authenticity is so important, whether virtually or as they say, IRL, right, in real life.
Mm-hmm. We're listening to Bob Berg again, and this is Realty Universal Radio. This is Natalie Mullinex. We've got about 10 minutes left. See how quick it went by, and we didn't even take one commercial. That's the one thing about not having to have sponsorships on our show, right? When you have sponsorships, you have to take the break.
That's right. You sure do.
And so Bob Berg, we can find out more information at berg.com. You also offer where people can license your what you're teaching trainings and actually learn directly from you and your organization, right? So they can find that information on berg.com because I really love how you just you cover all the bases and people, they learn what to do and learn what it means and how it means. I mean, naturally and through trainings, I think they can see a lot of value coming back into their life, not only money, but in better relationships, in less misunderstandings, because communication is so important in everything we do. The law of reciprocity. Listen to me, I'm tongue-tied
receptivity.
Today.
Receptivity. Yeah, that's okay.
I just got up really, really early today, so I'm tongue-tied here.
That's okay. That's a tough one to say.
Yeah, so receptivity. So you brought it up, and just to touch a little bit on...
Yeah, let's talk on that, because, Natalie, it is really important. It's what ties it all together. The law of receptivity simply says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. And near the end of the story, the main mentor, Pindar, asks Joe, the protege, to breathe out and hold that breath to the count of 30. And Joe tries, but, you know, within 10 seconds or so, he's struggling for air. He's gasping for breath. And Pindar says, "What's the matter, Joe? Can't do it." And Joe says, "No, I can't just breathe out, right? I got to breathe in, too." And Pindar jokingly says, "Well, Joe, what if I was to tell you that it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in?" And Joe just laughs. He says, "Well, that's silly. You know, you can't do one or the other. You've got to do both." Well, of course,
right.
We breathe out and we breathe in, right? We breathe out, we breathe in, we breathe out carbon dioxide, we breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving, we breathe in, which is receiving. We've got to do both. Well, I think because of the nature of the world and the messages of lack that we receive from so many places, many, many people believe, even on an unconscious level, that giving and receiving are two opposite concepts, but they're really not. They're not at all. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work best in tandem. It's not a matter of saying, well, am I a giver or a receiver? It's no, I'm a giver and a receiver.
I think it's hard for a lot of people to learn to receive. You know how a lot of people want to give, and then somebody gives you a compliment, and you go, no, not true.
Right.
Or you want to give somebody a gift, and then they come back and give you a gift. Oh, no, I didn't want you to do that, right? And I'm one of those people that it took me a long time to finally say, thank you for that gift, you know?
Right, and, well, exactly.
You know, and it just makes sense, doesn't it, to,
And so Yeah, and the key is just, you know, understanding that if you have provided value to others, if you've provided value to the lives of others, if you've put their interests first, if you've been authentic about it, then you've earned the right, not the entitlement, but the right to receive. So long as your focus has been on giving value, you've earned the right to receive. You just need to be able to embrace that. And once you do, all of a sudden things change beautifully for you, and you know, abundance really happens.
I think a lot of people have trouble receiving, to me, what I've noticed.
Oh, that's the biggest, that's the of the letters we get. The biggest is, you know, before reading your book, you know, I kind of always knew the other things, but I had never given myself permission to receive, and the Go-Giver has finally allowed me to do that. You know, it's too bad that it takes a book like that sometimes to do that, but we're glad we could be of help in that way, of helping people to come up with that final principle, if you will, that helps make their life a little bit more complete.
It's huge. It's huge, because it's like you have to still love oneself, right? You have to love yourself and allow love to come in. And that's amazing. I mean, it just be so nice if we could learn all this when we're children, wouldn't it? Instead of having to learn as you get older.
Sure.
And
well, you know, what we can do is learn it and then pass it along to our children so they can learn it when they're younger.
Great idea. That is perfect. We have about 5 minutes left here, and you're on Realty Universal speaking with Bob Berg, and this is Natalie Mullinex. I want to be there's a term you talk about that some would say it's maybe a strange one. I don't know. Can you, a MacGuffin? A MacGuffin?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, well, a MacGuffin is a, it's a, I've lost the word. It's an acting term. It's a film term. It was really coined by the great British film director, the late Alfred Hitchcock. And
really?
A MacGuffin, yeah.
Oh,
A MacGuffin is basically the object around which the story revolves. And we'll relate that to sales, of course, in a moment. But in other words, in a movie like The Wizard of Oz, the old classic, the MacGuffin was Dorothy getting back home to Kansas, right?
Okay.
You know, the entire movie was around that, was based on that, was revolved around that. In the movie Rocky, the classic from the 70s, the MacGuffin was the 15-round heavyweight championship fight with Apollo Creed. Everything in the movie was based around that.
Yeah.
But what happens is when you get to the end of most good stories like those two, you realize that thing, that object the story was about, wasn't really what it was about. Dorothy always had the power to get back to Kansas. What it was really about was four friends discovering that the character traits they thought they lacked, they actually had the entire time. They just had to step into it and embrace it. With Rocky, the MacGuffin might have been the fight with Creed, but really it was about an internal struggle that one man had, who began the movie by, you know, feeling like a loser, who came to realize that he actually had a lot of value to offer the world, especially those he loved and who loved him. So how does this relate to sales? Well, so often
how do we find
think,
our MacGuffin?
Finding the MacGuffin's easy. I mean, if you're in real estate, the MacGuffin is the houses. If you're in financial services, your MacGuffin is the financial instruments or products. If you are, you know what I'm saying? But those aren't what the sale are about. In real estate, yeah, the home is the commodity. It's the MacGuffin. But the business you're in, if you're selling homes, is connecting people with what's going to be their memories over the next 25 years.
Makes sense.
Yeah, if you're in financial services, the MacGuffin might be the various investment tools, but really what the sale is about is helping that person to feel financially secure. So we need to always remember that it's never about, not only is it never about us, the sale is really also never about our MacGuffin. It's always about the other person.
Wonderful. Wow, I love it. I love it. We literally have about a minute and a half left. I'm going to ask you briefly about the law of left field and then ask you to just tell a parting shot to all of our listeners.
Well, the law of left field is, and it's not its own law, it's actually a sub-law or a mini-law It's part of the law of receptivity, and it simply says the greatest gifts will come to you at moments and from places you least expect. And what that means, there's nothing magical about it. It simply means that when you get that referral that came out of nowhere, out of left field, and you don't know where it's from, there's a good chance that it really didn't come out of nowhere, but it really came out of everywhere. It came because you've added so much value to the lives of so many people that somehow that person ended up being connected with it, and boom, you got the referral.
I call it planting the seeds, and the seeds come back to you.
Exactly.
You know, they take harvest, and they come
exactly.
back.
Exactly.
Wow, boy, I hope you'll come back. This is just so fantastic. I think I want to you're just amazing. I want to learn the systems that you have. And
thank you.
I think everybody can learn. Anybody in sales really needs to get this book. Anybody should get the book. It can teach you how to give back with your family, your friends, everything, you know, to get the message home very well. So give us a parting shot because we're getting ready to take off.
Well, really, just I think whatever it is we do, we need to learn it the best that we can, have a strong desire to serve others and to succeed ourselves, and to stay persistent with it, and always recognize that, you know, the best way that we are going to receive value is by first providing that value to others.
I love it. I love it. Bob, it's been such a pleasure, and I hope
you'll
come back.
Friend.
And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information...
Remember when you couldn't order a ride at the press of a button? Or get online without hearing this? Or get Domino's delivered to over 150,000 unexpected outdoor locations?
Wait, what?
Introducing Domino's Hotspots. You can finally get pizza delivered right to the beach, the quad, or the dog park. Not at home? Not a problem. Find a Domino's Hotspot near you and get two medium two-topping pizzas delivered for $5.99 each. Two-item minimum handmade pan pizzas will be extra. Ask for this limited time offer. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary. Restrictions apply. Visit Domino's.com for details on Domino's Hotspots.
So much hair for a newborn. We need to start planning his baptism and his holiday outfit and, ooh, his birthday party.
Sure, but how long are you planning to stay?
If you're one of those who goes to meet your newborn nephew and stays until his first birthday party, switch to Cricket Wireless. Use your phone as many days as you want in Mexico without extra cost. Smile. You're on Cricket. Requires eligible plan. Minimum $55 per month. Data speed usage and other restrictions apply. Coverage not available everywhere. See store for details.